The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only.
Avril Flynn, a midwife and educator, is asking the questions in this episode.
Welcome to the Beat Podcast. I'm so delighted to welcome Dr. Alex Richardson to this episode, Nutrition and Brain Development, a focus on fats. And we literally couldn't have a world leader that knows more about that subject than Dr. Alex Richardson. She is the founder, director of Food and Behaviour Fab Research UK. Alex's work is highly interdisciplinary, including studies of epidemiology, genetics, brain imaging, biochemistry, psychophysiology, as well as clinical trials and nutritional supplementation, and centres on the role of nutrition and dietary fats in particular in brain development and function, its implication for behaviour, learning and mood, the biology of individual differences in personality, perception and cognition, particularly in relation to developmental and psychiatric disorders. And Alex is also the author of a widely acclaimed book, They Are What You Feed Them, written for both parents and professionals, and explains how and why children's diets can affect their behaviour, learning and mood. It offers easy to follow practical advice based on scientific evidence. And all author proceeds of this book are dedicated to the Fab Research, which is a charity. You're so welcome, Dr. Alex.
Well, after that introduction, Avril, you've humbled me here. But yeah, I hope I can do justice to that introduction, and it's a pleasure to be here and to meet you.
I have no doubt you will. This is an area, I suppose, as we move forward and understand more about exactly how from the moment really of conception and before, both genetically and otherwise, we have certain predispositions, but yet within the world we live in, we have a huge role to play in what we actually physically put into our bodies. But taking it back to the start, how does the brain develop and how does nutrition, I suppose, begin to impact on this?
Oh, well, in terms of how the brain develops and really how a baby develops, I think one of the miraculous things, if we even think about it, is how the fusion of two cells becomes, in just 9 months, a fully formed baby, if we're lucky and if all goes well and if the pregnancy goes to term. Now, everything required to build that baby has to come from mother and her diet, essentially. So in terms of how the brain develops, it's really very early on, within the first 4 weeks of pregnancy, which is often before many women even know that they're pregnant for sure, that is when the beginnings of the brain and nervous system form and even close into what's called the neural tube. Now, I think most women have heard, or we hope they have, of things like folic acid, because that's certainly one of the nutrients absolutely critical for the proper formation and closure of that neural tube. But also others, I must say, choline, which most pregnant women know nothing about, and which 90% of women don't get enough choline in pregnancy. It's found mainly in liver, eggs, animal foods in particular, you know, so the plant-based diet needs a bit of revision there, but also the dietary fats, everything required to build a baby's brain. We've got to remember the brain is 60% fat. Now it's the most fat-rich organ in the body, but all of our vital organs, and particularly the brain and nervous system, really do require the right fats. As for how the brain develops while baby's still in the womb, we've got the formation, as I say, of this neural tube, you know, that's in the first month. And really, we're looking at something that looks a bit like a tadpole, if that, that stage.
It's a pretty good description. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Now, the thing is, it's actually the last 3 months, the last trimester of pregnancy, when the most rapid period of brain development goes on. That's why prematurity is to be avoided if at all possible. And I'm going to advance, say, the long chain omega-3, we have definitive evidence can help prevent premature, you know, preterm birth. But yeah, if we think about to build a brain, you've absolutely got to have the other organs, particularly the cardiovascular system. We've got to get that blood flow and, you know, the beginnings of the fetal heart and blood circulation and other organs. That's why the really rapid period of brain development is not until the last 3 months. But I also want to give just a little bit of detail. How the brain develops, every single neuron, brain cell, they all are born in a particular central region of the brain. They then have to climb scaffolded fibers in order to reach their final positions. It's something we call neuronal migration. So they've all got to know where to go, climb almost like an army of rope climbers up some radial fibers to take their place. And then even more fascinating is that the cortex, the outer, what we call the gray matter of the brain. Now, this again, we're into the later stages of pregnancy before anything recognizable here is really getting formed and shaped, but the migration goes on in earlier stages, but each individual neuron has got to push past all the others to form the final outer layer of the six regular layers of cortex. There are literally six layers of neurons. And I want to emphasize here, because my specialist area, what took me into research from teaching, was conditions like dyslexia, ADHD, and autism spectrum disorders, and other developmental and psychiatric conditions. There's no question that they do now know that subtle, just very minor anomalies of that neuronal migration, they can actually mean lasting differences in brain function. Because if you've got just even tiny little differences in the microarchitecture, that can affect the way that the brain develops and functions in later life. So it's all quite miraculous.
It's that whole idea, though, that you have this really important first stage where a lot of people mightn't even know that they're pregnant.
Yeah.
And that essential last stage, but also throughout the entire pregnancy as well.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned some of the nutrients that affect brain development, but what are some of the others that are hugely important and we now really understand that getting enough of them and the right ones are essential? Because I suppose as a healthcare professional in the wider community, the messaging around fats can be quite mixed and can be quite difficult for the man on the street to understand. So what exactly are those key nutrients, and how as healthcare professionals do we relay that information to the people in our care?
Okay. First thing I think is we need to get the word out that preconception, you alluded to this, it is preconception really that is key here, because it's pretty difficult, you know, to get all the nutrients needed to keep up with the rate at which cells are going to be multiplying, dividing at some periods. This kind of thing takes your breath away. Building 250,000 cells a day, and every one of them needs the right raw materials, and those have got to come from diet, essentially. So, but because of the, I'm going to start with macronutrients, and I'm going to emphasize firstly, if our genes, each cell has got, you know, all of our genes, but here's another little miracle. Each cell has got the same DNA. And it's got to work out what kind of cell it's going to become. Is it going to be a brain cell? Is it going to be, you know, part of a skeleton? Is it going to be a kidney cell? It's also got to essentially switch off, therefore, all of the genes it does not need to express. So we're into something called epigenetics, okay, which is how the environment of every cell and the environment of every gene, quite frankly, that includes other genes, is going to tell that gene whether to switch itself on or off, and how much of its product. Genes are essentially recipes for making proteins. So let's actually start with dietary protein. Now, proteins are just long chains of amino acids. So the quality of protein, as well as the amount, of course, is important. But I will say this is mainly an issue in developing countries or in people who are malnourished because of, let's say, eating disorders. Now, these are all too common, or starvation type malnutrition. That tends to be when you get overall lack of protein. Otherwise, I'm just going to flag very briefly high quality protein that contains all of the so-called essential amino acids. Some amino acids we can make for ourselves, others we can't. Now, of course, it's animal foods that do provide what's called complete protein. But again, a well-planned vegetarian diet, you just combine protein sources. I'm now going to move to fats, and we're going to talk a lot about these. As I say, 60% of your brain is fat. The membrane of every cell in your body and brain is fat. Lipids, fats, it's such an unglamorous word, fat, and it's been demonized now for far too long. And even in the post-war period, oh, proteins were such glamorous things for scientists to study, along with genetics. Fats, who wants to study boring fats? Excuse me, the definition of a cell, the membrane, the boundary of that cell, and also all of the compartments within that cell. There are many, many, many of these. They're all made of lipids. In fact, special kinds of lipids called phospholipids. What you've essentially got is a phosphate head group, two fatty acids attached, and it really does matter what type of fatty acids those are. And before we leave macronutrients, I'll just say carbs are not essential.
But they're very tasty.
They are. Yes. And doesn't the food industry know it? And don't people? Exactly. Yes. High sugar, high carb. Oh, no, this is not good because it crowds out, of course, you know, as well as the demonization of fat. Fat does not make you fat. It's actually sugar that does that. The evidence, it is absolutely definitive. They've even exposed, good grief, that it was the sugar industry back in the late 60s that decided to plant the story that fat was bad. Fat not only makes you fat, it gives you heart disease. No, it doesn't. Absolutely none of that is true. So the sugary, high-carb, ultra-processed foods, which are full of bad fats, essentially, industrialized artificial fats, as well as far too much in the way of refined carbohydrates. My single most important piece of advice to any woman approaching, you know, planning a pregnancy, or even once you find out if it was unplanned, for goodness sake, cut the sugary stuff, cut the ultra-processed foods, eat real foods. So we've dealt with the macronutrients. I'll quickly say vitamins and minerals. Now, Avril, we don't call them essential nutrients for nothing. We need all of them. Every single one of them is essential. But if we look at the vitamins, vitamin A, let's start with the fat soluble vitamins, because again, if women, and oh, the pressures on women are just impossible here. There they are trying to look perfect, trying to be perfect, trying to do every job, trying to, you know, maintain health and support themselves and that growing baby. But the fat soluble vitamins, vitamin A, absolutely critical for the immune system, for the brain and nervous system. And again, beta carotene, which is found in all kinds of plant foods, that is not actually active vitamin A, and not everyone can convert beta carotene efficiently into vit A. But with vitamin A, you need not too much, because too much vitamin A can be toxic. That's why I will say, if anyone asks about supplements, cod liver oil, you don't want to be doing much of that, because it's got preformed active vitamin A. And likewise, it's why pregnant women should, I think, be told to not take a whole load of supplements, each of which might have vitamin A. That can be toxic in excess, okay? But you do need some. Vitamin D. Now, the main source is not diet. It's sunshine. But I think we know we don't get much of that in the UK.
In the Northern Hemisphere, yes, most absolutely, definitely.
Well, the advice has finally come through that really everyone should supplement Vit D most of the year round. Certainly you can't make any between September and March. That we need this message to get across. Vitamin D is critical for brain development, not just for what everyone sort of knows it for, of the skeleton and helping, you know, to get calcium into your bones and teeth. Vitamin D is critical in brain development. And I really have to say, I've been following this story now for more than 20, 30 years. schizophrenia was where the story began. Why do we have, you know, a seasonal pattern of births? We see the same thing with autism. We see the same thing with ADHD. But yeah, the animal studies have also been done, and they are definitive. A lack of vitamin D in pregnancy changes brain development in ways that raise the risk for a whole range of psychiatric and developmental disorders. So we have got to get this message out there. And it isn't out there yet. I do know that when I give talks, you know, then doctors will come up to me and they will thank me for sort of reinforcing this. Because again, I think we do know that for a fact that skin colour, as well as habits of dress, as well as whether you ever get outdoors, these things mean that huge proportions of women in pregnancy, and particularly our ethnic minorities in a country where the sun doesn't shine like the UK, are going to have a higher risk of vitamin D deficiency. You must supplement. Okay. Now, onto the others. I've mentioned folic acid, but all the B vitamins, these all really work together. They tend not to be so likely to be lacking as some other key nutrients. And let's have a shout out for iodine. Iodine deficiency. Oh, no. WHO has flagged this. It is the single biggest cause of mental disorders worldwide, because you need iodine for thyroid function, to make the thyroid hormones. Now, I grew up in Derbyshire, and right up until the 60s, there was a condition called Derbyshire neck, goiter, basically, because the further you are from the sea, iodine, traditionally, found in the marine food chain. So fish, seafood, but if you were inland, and this is still the case worldwide, oops, shortages of iodine, serious physical and mental health conditions, the extreme form of iodine deficiency, it's the technical meaning of the word cretin. It is a profound, but we have an awful lot of mild iodine deficiency, and Britain is, oh, shocking here. We are amongst all the developed countries. We are the only one that has no public health policy on iodine.
Wow.
It's really not on, because what actually happened was the public health problem that, as I say, was really still going on till the 60s, quite frankly, in inland regions of the UK. It was the use of iodine disinfectants in the dairy industry, such that milk and dairy products actually overtook fish and seafood, the natural source of iodine, and still are. But I think we know not many women these days are necessarily drink much, you know, milk or eat much dairy, because we are getting changes, you see, in fads, fashions, trends. Lots of people are now, oh, avoiding milk and dairy. Well, if you are, you absolutely need to make sure that your diet has enough iodine. It is critical for brain development. And again, the big children of the 90s birth cohort study, we are knocking several points off the IQ of our children, because it was 2/3 of those women had mild to moderate iodine deficiency in pregnancy. Representative sample, followed through, control for everything else. This isn't good.
So we can really take a correlation. And if we look at a generational issue of that moving forward, if you have a generation of women and babies that are not receiving this message from us, the healthcare professionals, who then go on to have their own babies, and moving forward through the generations, surely you are going to have even greater sources of deficiency and probably disorder and disease. If
we need to get the message out there, yeah. And we're up against the food industry and the ultra processed foods and the adverts, but you're absolutely right. The knowledge that, in a sense, it used to be pretty much handed down, usually through the female of the family, you know, grandmothers, mothers, and teaching, you know, children how to prepare their own food. I'm going to come back to the main message: try to eat real food.
So food that hasn't gone through several processes to be sitting on your plate. And how do you think, as healthcare professionals, how we can better give that advice to pregnant women? Because obviously there is something being lost in translation if we are still seeing in the year 2021, you know, a huge, I suppose, mixture of messages. How can we, I suppose, turn fats back to being fab?
Well, okay, first thing we need to do is tell them all to eat fish and seafood and meet dietary guidelines. You get almost a complete nutritional package there. This is the thing. Because iodine, as I said, that's in the marine food chain. So you've also got the long chain omega-3. Let's come to these fats. Because to build that brain and nervous system, as well as the other vital organs, mother must have these in her diet and in her own tissues in order to provide them to the developing baby. And it's the long chain omega-3 and 6 fats that matter. Now, these two series, these are the only fats that are essential, are the omega-3 and the omega-6 families. They are the polyunsaturates, okay? But we have a massive excess of omega-6 in modern Western diets, particularly the short chain that's found in all vegetable oils. And we have a very serious lack of omega-3, either short or long chain. I'm also going to say it's the long chain that matter. And although we have pathways for converting short chain omega-3 and 6, and the omega-3 sources of those would be things like walnuts or flaxseed, you know, linseed oil and so on, they are minimal, and conversion has absolutely definitively been shown to be unreliable in humans for making DHA. The really important fatty acid for brain structure, EPA and DHA, are the long chain omega-3 we need. They're found in fish and seafood, so they're found in fish oils if you insist on getting them as a supplement. But because fish and seafood has the whole package, quite frankly, it's also got the iodine, it's got selenium, it's got zinc, you're going to get some vitamin D in there, it's got B vitamins, it's got high quality protein. So what we must do is dispel the ongoing myth and fear about, oh, what about the mercury? What about the pollutants? Absolute rot and nonsense. This was exposed more than 10 years ago. It did actually lead, in the end, to a change in official dietary advice in the USA. But the benefits of fish and seafood, compared with the theoretical risks from possible, never been documented in humans apart from industrial and, you know, the odd case in the Faroe Islands where they ate, you know, poisoned, you know, seals and things like this. No way. You would lose 0.0 something of an IQ point from the mercury. You would gain about 5 or 6 IQ points from the fish and seafood. The outcomes, all of the brain outcomes for children, and the ALSPAC study showed this, controlling for all of the other variables known to affect these things, children's verbal IQ, children's social skills, their motor development, everything, including lack of impulsivity and other disruptive behavior, everything was better in the women who exceeded the 2 portions of fish a week type guidelines, okay? So in the States, they've made that now the target. And I would say that's what health professionals need to do to reassure women that fish and seafood is not something to be feared. It is absolutely the best possible package.
So really what you're saying, Dr. Alex, is we need to stick to the science and stay away from the clickbait.
Exactly, exactly. If only.
And can you share, I know you've mentioned a couple of fascinating studies, but could you share any useful resources for healthcare professionals? I know that we'll attach a whole suite when we put out the podcast, but is there one or two? I know that your own, the Fab Research Institute, I know it has amazing resources. Are they freely available to healthcare professionals?
Now Fab Research, no question, we have a huge library database that goes back, my goodness, nearly 20 years of adding research papers and news articles and other resources, including books, to that website. And most of those are free, but I would encourage people, if they can, please support the charity by joining. Our associates get access to an audio video library with a lot of the top researchers explaining both the science and the practice, because what we do need is that more nutrition professionals and dietitians are able to help translate what we do know about nutrition into practice. And in terms of practical tips for the omega-3 and 6, apart from eating the fish and the seafood, now, of course, vegetarians, vegans, there are algal sources as supplements and some fortified foods that will provide DHA, Some of them will also provide EPA. These are also critical for the breastfeeding period. I haven't emphasized here, but yeah, mum's breast milk, you see, would normally contain the long chain omega-3 DHA, the long chain omega-6 arachidonic. Not all infant formula to this day still does, but the best infant formula do. And if you aren't able to breastfeed, which is absolutely the best thing to do if you can, then what women really do need to do is make sure that infant formula provides these long chain omega-3 and 6 ready-made. You need them for vision, you need them for brain function in general, and it will reduce the risk, this is what all of the studies show, of a whole range of mental and physical health conditions in your child.
And it really takes back to the initial point, you really are what you eat. And we have an obligation as healthcare professionals to ensure that we are telling the women, patients, and I suppose future generations of the importance of this. Thank you so much, Dr. Alex. I could chat to you, I think, for about 2 years on this subject.
We need to rebook another podcast to go into any one of these subjects in more detail.
Absolutely.
I'm excited to do so in the future.
But thank you so much for your expertise. And again, just to encourage people to check out your research, which really is groundbreaking. And again, following the science, following the research, we can never really go wrong, can we?
Well, it's just that science, of course, progresses. Some things that we didn't know, you know, 10 years ago, we're going to find out in the next 10 years. But yeah, evidence-based, that's what things need to be. And don't listen to the adverts, stay off social media, check out what the evidence actually says.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alex. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Beat Podcast.
To keep up to date with future episodes of the Beat Podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk. I'm not going to do that.